This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me...
Kate Eplin.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Kate, you're involved in, and currently working in the voluntary sector in Palmerston North.
That's correct, yes. I'm the manager of Whatungatuao Volunteer Central, which used to be called Manawatu Resource Centre, Volunteer Resource Centre. Manawatuan Districts, which was rather a long name and didn't seem to represent the areas that we covered, being Tararua, Horowhenua, Manawatu and Palmerston North. So we rebranded in time for COVID.
Okay. Now, you say we. What sort of organisation is it? Is it branch of council? Or?
No, Volunteer Central is a charity and we are a standalone organisation. There are 17 volunteer centres around the country. We're all independent of each other and all have our own boards of trustees, and we work closely with our local communities within the region that we work in to actually look at how to improve community connections and safety and vibrancy, etc., through volunteering.
So how did this, what's the history of the organisation or set of organisations?
So the first one that set up was in Auckland, and that was in around about 2002. From a lady who's extremely passionate about community and volunteering and the benefits of volunteering for the community, and her name's Cheryl Martin, and she was one of the last QSOs to be recognised. So she was the last QSO as opposed to a KSO.
Queen's Service Order as opposed to King's.
And so she was good friends with the founder of Volunteer Resource Centre Manawatuan Districts, Narelle Ward, who's well known in the Palmerston North Manawatu community.
What's the name again?
Narelle Ward.
Okay.
So she's, her and her friend Cheryl got together and said, okay, it's working up in Auckland, and by then Christchurch had come on board, and then Wellington, and then we came on board in this area here. So lots of sharing of information and resources and experience, etc., and passionate people about the community.
So they just said, yes, we want to set up a centre. And they said, we'll do it from the kitchen table for free of charge.
It was from the kitchen table to start with. There used to be an organisation in Palmerston North that was called the Palmerston North Enterprise Group, I think it was. What's his name? Property Brokers. He was the chair of the Palmerston North Enterprise Group, and Narelle became part of that enterprise group to look at what community development needed to be done and how the local business community could support that. So it started off as a grant, basically, through Property Brokers.
So the business community was keen to support the voluntary sector.
Yes.
Very good.
And they still are, in fairness. Yeah. It's becoming more and more common for businesses to give what they call volunteer days, but I call them community give back days because they'll only do it in their work time and you can't get paid for volunteering. So it's a community give back day. So we arrange quite a few around the community.
And that's very common, is it? Mainly it's large employers?
Not just large employers. There's some small, some large, some independent, some part of bigger chains.
So basically you've got companies that are paying their employees to do community work.
Yes, it's probably something that's really grown in the last sort of 7 years to 10 years is the there was an expectation from government from central government that government organisations would actually show some commitment to their community other than providing the service. So for a lot of government organisations, it was actually written into their contracts with central government.
Okay, so public sector does that.
Yeah.
And private sector, it's publicity and image and so on.
Yeah, or just doing something good for the community. Yeah.
So when they're doing it, would it be sort of one day a year or...?
Usually in their contracts, it's one day a year.
Okay.
But some will give a lot more.
Yeah.
And some might not even get to one day.
But it's growing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So, it's nice to see the community actually coming together, particularly since we've all come back to a new reality after COVID. It's like, how do we actually connect with each other again and feel safe to do so and support each other? And volunteering is a great way to do that.
Yeah. I think COVID also showed the extent to which we're reliant on each other, or if one group isn't doing well, it can affect others badly, so you need to support each other.
Absolutely, yes. So there were some really good community relationships and networks that grew out of COVID. I mean, there's not a lot of positive stuff said about COVID, but there have been some real opportunities for organisations that may not have actually spoken to each other very much beforehand that did similar things, like food provision, for example, who worked together to actually make sure the community needs were met rather than just a particular part of it.
And the goodwill that was generated then has carried on with?
Yeah, most of it has, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we, Volunteer Central, because I've got a background in public health, I could see what was happening around the world before it actually really hit New Zealand. And so I'd started having talks with the DHB, who got the money from Civil Defence to set up the initial response for COVID, and talk to them about what we called an essential wellbeing delivery service. And so we had an agreement around that and how we'd work, and so people that were going into quarantine, because remember, right back at the beginning, it was quarantine and away from your house. So we were, when someone was going into quarantine, the DHB would contact us with the address. We never got to know the people's names. It was just their address, and we'd go and pick up a food parcel or medication or clothing, or on one case, a whole car boot full of toys for kids of different ages. And go and pick those up and deliver them to the place where people were quarantining, which ended up being a 3.5 year contract where our volunteers spent a significant amount of time, but they travelled the length of the country 21 times over 3.5 years doing deliveries, distance-wise.
So can we backtrack a bit?
Yeah.
You were saying how the group got involved. You had the enterprise group.
Yeah. And then started getting contracts with DIA, the Department of Internal Affairs, who had a volunteering contract that people could sign up to if they were a volunteer organisation.
Volunteering contract.
An agreement, a grant type.
Oh, gave them money.
So there was some initial investment from the enterprise group, and which then gave them enough kudos and impetus, I guess, to be able to start.
That's it. If you've got some money from one place, you can get some from elsewhere.
That was that. They started forming in 2005, this group. That's when the first discussions started happening.
Yeah.
Became a charitable trust in 2007 and started functioning as a volunteer centre in 2010.
Oh, sorry, quite a long lead time, really.
It takes a wee while to set up a community organisation if you actually want to make sure you're addressing a real community need as opposed to just a piecemeal.
So was it active before 2010 or...?
Not as an organisation.
Okay.
No, so it became an it became functioning as an organisation in 2010. Yeah.
So you need certain people who are really dedicated and able to do all the paperwork processes and so on just to get something set up.
And you can't get grants to do that. So it's people with the passion that actually get involved in those early stages, because until you actually get that first contract or agreement, you're working for love.
Yes, and given that there's several of these organisations, were you given guidance by an umbrella organisation, or
no, we were on your own? We don't have an umbrella organisation.
Okay.
So in 2012, when there were 7 volunteer centres around the country, it was decided by the volunteer centres that they actually needed someone to sort of coordinate some of the national type advocacy type work and best practice and research rather than each centre having to do it. So the volunteer centres approached Department of Internal Affairs, and from there Volunteering New Zealand was developed. So Volunteering New Zealand was originally set up to be a support service for volunteer centres. However, DIA wanted it to be that they not only support the volunteer centres, they support all volunteering involving organisations around the country.
Okay.
So it moved from a volunteer centres initiative to a national initiative. So people often see Volunteering New Zealand as an umbrella organisation for volunteer centres, but Volunteering New Zealand are there to do the strategy, the higher level stuff, the advocacy at a higher level, the research across the country.
So that'd be sort of like a go-to place. If there's legal issues come up, you can get advice from
They don't do that. No, they're about volunteering best practice and supporting the community to actually respect and celebrate volunteers and volunteering. But they're at a high level strategy.
So are they sort of public servants working there? Or
No, that's not a
separate body, another charity.
So the volunteer centres are the ones that actually work with our local boards, our local volunteer centre board, to implement the local government, the local council, the local iwi, what the priorities of the local community are. So that's what we
do. So you're proactive, or you're just supporting the voluntary groups that are doing their own thing?
Very proactive. So we're involved in quite a lot of community development. I guess if you look at the essential wellbeing delivery service for COVID, that was before the first case of COVID arrived in Palmerston North, and so we had the structure already set up beforehand. We are out there in the community pretty well every day doing something. We work with organisations that cover basic, we say, from gardening to governance and emergency to every day. So we actually hear what's going on for these organisations and volunteers.
You say we. Are you a large organisation yourselves or just lots of contacts?
When I say we, it's the royal we. We've got 2 paid staff who've just been increased to 40 hours a week each. And the rest of our work is supported by a board of trustees of 8 people who help set our direction. Office volunteers and pop-up volunteers who do the face-to-face on the phone, registering volunteers, looking for opportunities for volunteers. But when I say we, that's the team.
Yeah,
we're very much a team.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the sort of work that you do then is the coordination, and then you say registering, listing volunteers. So what's
different? We've got probably four different real focus branches that we do. So one of them is that we register volunteers. So it costs nothing for people to volunteer.
Hang on, they've not actually volunteered yet, though, have they? They're people who want to volunteer. You register people who want to volunteer.
Yeah. Once we register them, they're volunteers.
Oh, even if they're doing nothing?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're still registered as a volunteer.
Okay.
But very few of them do nothing when you register them. Most of them actually come in.
You mean you find something very quickly, or they're looking for something?
Because all of the roles are on our website, people can have a look and go, that's interesting. I never knew that existed.
Okay, so what we've got then, you have a website where a group will contact you and say, look, we need someone for this, and you list it on the website, volunteer wanted, who can.
So we've got four, as I said before, we've got four different branches. One is registering volunteers. So we get to know the volunteer and what their skills and interests and passions are, and what they're wanting to achieve out of volunteering, which could be that they're just wanting to give back to the community.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of it is around people who might have had an injury and are having to look at a different scope of work than they've done previously because they can't go back to it, or they're seeking skills for employment, or they're wanting to make connections in the community because they're new to the area. Lots of different reasons that people will sign up as a volunteer. We get to know them and register them with us. So that's one branch, is registering the volunteers.
Yeah.
The second one is we have member organisations who are not-for-profit or for-purpose organisations within our community. And they cover a whole range of things. There's something for everybody. There's, you know, lots of community garden work, lots of conservation work, lots of
when you say members, they subscribe, they pay an annual sample.
They pay a small membership fee, which at the moment the maximum is $100 for a 12-month period. So it's not a huge one, but it's important to us that our organisations that we're finding volunteers for are actually aware of what their responsibilities as an organisation are. So we're not here to actually set volunteers up to be free labour or anything like that. It's actually about...
Okay. So you're only placing volunteers with organisations that have registered with you?
That's right.
Okay.
However, in saying that, we're close to the 200 mark of member organisations, so there's quite a few. So we'll work with the organisation about what they're wanting to achieve from having volunteers, and we'll develop different roles for volunteers for them, using what we know as far as availability and accessibility, etc., out in the community, rather than organisations just going ahead and registering a big role. We'll suggest, how about you break it down to three or four different roles? You're more likely to get people that way. So then once we've got the roles, we do a search and match volunteers with our with
does
the roles.
Does it tend to be a good match, the things people, volunteers want to do and the things that are required?
Yeah, we've really focused in the last 5 years on... So when we offer a role to a volunteer, it's called a referral. So we give them the information about the role. The volunteer says, yes, I'm interested in, or no, I'm not. If they're not interested, that's it. That's where it stays. If they are interested, then we do what's called a connection with the organisation that has the role. And then the person gets taken on board as a volunteer. So what we call our measure of success is the conversion of referrals to connections, because that means we're getting the right person, the right volunteer to the right role with the right organisation for them. So that percentage is our success measure, and in the last 5 years that's grown from 7% to 84%. So we've really focused on making it right.
Does that mean that you have the right mix overall for the requirements, or are there certain gaps that you just can't get volunteers for, or a lot of volunteers for certain things and not enough openings for them?
There are always openings. The challenge for a lot of organisations is actually in their governance committee, getting enough people to be on their governance committee, particularly the treasurer role.
So chair, president, secretary, treasurer, those are the difficult ones.
Also the treasurer is the difficult, that's is the really one hard. That's got the most difficult.
Is that
difficult.
Because of obligations that they have?
I think it's... I think there is a fear that if they do something wrong, then they're personally liable and it might make the business go under or something like that. The reality is that the whole board is responsible, not just one person on the board anymore. The whole board has equal accountability and responsibility.
And is that accountability? So are they personally liable for...
Yeah.
There are penalties for...
Yeah, a board member can be sued for bad practice.
Okay.
However...
Does it happen?
Well, it has, actually, but not often.
Yeah.
Because it's only recently changed from individuals having responsibility to the whole board having the collective responsibility.
Okay.
But what the intention of that is that it shares the risk, and it makes every board member be actively responsible, so or actively engaged, instead of coming along to a meeting and disappearing and the treasurer and the chair doing all the work in the background. So so it was about trying to ensure that boards are actually proactive, that they've got the right risk management strategies in place, that they are reviewing those strategies, etc.
Now, this seems to be one of the problems, is it, with people think, yes, we'll set up something. Do we become an incorporated society or a charity? And the time it takes and the effort and the obligations and so on for just to do something voluntary, is that...
Excuse me. Yeah. I'd be very careful about just jumping in to set a charity up or an incorporated society up because you've seen a gap. Because every time you set a charity up or incorporated society, you need that governance structure. So if you think of, you know, there being 400 organisations that are all charities, and they need a minimum of 8 board members, that's 3,200 people just for the governance structure, let alone the work. So really it's more advisable to actually look at what's out there, and okay, part of what's happening might not suit what you're doing or what you want to see. Instead of setting up a new organisation, how can you work with the existing ones to fill that gap?
That
would be the recommendation.
And that does that seem to be a major constraint then that you find out? And do you, if someone's thinking of setting up a group, they will come to you for advice and get guidance?
Some do come to us for advice. Yeah. Some go to different community organisations like Te Puhana Keke, the Community Services Council, for example. Or they might go to the local council and speak to one of the community development advisors, or they might go to Department of Internal Affairs. There's lots of different entry points. But what is known now is that the way the community sector has been doing things is not going to be sustainable for the future. There's less funding out there, there's less people out there, and unless we actually work together in a collaborative way, some organisations won't survive.
And are they, volunteers tend to be ageing, or?
It depends where you are. There is a report that's called the State of Volunteering Report that actually tells you across the country, you know, what the average age is, etc. In some rural communities, there is a concern about the ageing volunteer population. The myth that you had to retire to be a volunteer is just a myth. There's lots of younger people that do want to volunteer. Palmerston North has one of the younger areas, one of the younger average ages of volunteers, particularly because of the fact that there's three tertiary institutions and two military bases.
So is there a difference then between volunteering and community groups? I mean, things like Rotary and Lions and so on, they're ageing groups, and they say younger people tend not to join groups like that. So are people volunteering in different channels now? Or?
The challenge with younger people volunteering is often the opportunity for them to volunteer is when they're otherwise engaged. They're either at school or doing sport or whatever. But organisations, if they want younger people, need to look at the way they work and say, how do we make ourselves attractive?
I'm talking about working age people. So, you know, because there used to be a lot of families where, you know, someone in the family joins the group, so the whole family's involved. And that doesn't seem to happen now.
It is with some. It is with some groups. There's really no rhyme or reason as to the trends of volunteers. Like, even if you look at rural versus metropolitan, the volunteers in metropolitan areas don't tend to stay in the roles as long as those in rural areas. There's more opportunities, and if they've had enough of that one, they can move on to another one. Yeah, whereas in a rural area, they want to do, they want to do good for the community, but there's less options available because there's less organisations.
Is there also now with two-income households rather than one, you don't have, say, one parent who has some free time to do that sort of thing?
That's certainly one aspect of it. But also people that used to retire either can't afford to retire, or they are looking after family members, grandchildren, etc. So the parents can go to work. Younger people after school are having to get jobs to bring money into the family, so they're not available for volunteering. So we need to look at things differently.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.